Hello, I'm Richard Bennett, and this is the High Tech Forum podcast, your go-to source for thoughtful discussion of the technology issues that underlie public policy controversies around the internet, mobile networks, and the future of communications in general. Today, I'm speaking with Shane Tews, who's the director of the Internet Governance and Cybersecurity Program at the American Enterprise Institute's Center for Internet Communications and Technology Policy. And we're going to talk about the future of networking, security, civility on the internet, and how retailers track us around stores to learn about our buying preferences. Welcome, Shane.
What about security? I mean, should we be concerned about these continual perpetual hacks? And, you know, obviously, if the data has value, people are going to, you know, want to steal it. Is there, you know, going to more people using two-factor authentication or ways to protect the network give us the ability to, you know, kind of go the next level on security?
Security is just an ongoing problem because a big part of the issue there is we don't really even know what it means.
Okay. Can you unpack that for me?
Yeah. Okay. So we know what a security breach looks like. Right. We know that like if a hacker from China is into my personal data and they're going to pull off an identity theft or a credit card heist, we know that's a security breach. So we know what insecurity is. Security means that I can share the information with the people I want to share it with, which is to say, it's really a question of trust, right? So who do I trust with the information, and how do I gauge the degree of sharing and the degree of trust that I have in a particular individual? And what happens if I realize my assessment was wrong? I mean, so the biggest security vulnerability that
you've already let them into your system.
Anyone has,
right.
Is you have decided to trust someone who is not maybe as trustworthy as you thought they were. And, you know, people are always surprising us with how clever they are, and they're always disappointing us with how devious they are.
Well, we also have people data hoarding, which just once they want to break into, or once they're in the networks, they're like, gee whiz, look at all this information, a la OPM.
Oh, you know, so the question is, once you've decided to share some information with someone who you thought was trustworthy, and it turns out they're not, how do you get it back? How do you revoke the trust?
Right.
Well, I mean, we really can't do that, can we?
That's a very good way of looking at it. I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah, and until we can do that, I mean, trust is...
So you can't kick them out once they're
in. It's effectively an illusion. And so the internet's not a... It never was really intended to be a trustworthy network.
I'm questioning humanity.
yeah. And so, I mean, that's actually the biggest problem, isn't
right.
it?
Right. It's a human error factor. The technology can only do so much.
We want networks to compensate for errors in judgment that we make because, you know, we're human and we're flawed and we have limited... Our epistemic capacities are inherently limited. We don't really know the things that we think we know. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things that we take as certainties that really aren't. And, you know, the list of those things is endless. I mean, and, you know, we all make mistakes. We all change our minds. We reassess situations and our priorities change. And so we can't really depend on networks to compensate for these flaws in our judgment and in human character. But what I think we want our networks to do is probably...
protect us from ourselves. Give you the ability to rethink your point of view every once in a while. Did you really want to give that... I mean, could you revoke at some point and say everybody has to go back in?
I mean, what I find the biggest security issue that I have is with advancing age is I don't always remember who I've shared things with, you know? And that's one thing that computers are really good at.
Right.
They remember stuff really well. They don't understand anything that they remember, but they remember stuff really well. So I'd like to be able to construct a path of, say, people that I've shared a particular password with. And so now we have password managers that will do that for you. I think that's a huge advance in security because they make it really easy to change passwords and they make it really easy to keep track of what passwords...
Do you have a favorite? Do you use LastPass or?
Yeah, I use LastPass.
And did the breach bother you?
Yeah, it was a pretty trivial breach, and it didn't affect me. I have the two-factor authentication thing.
Right.
But you know, they told us about it, and they told us who was affected and who wasn't. And you know, when it's, they make it really easy to, you can like do a one-click password update on a lot of sites through LastPass. So it's a trivial problem. So yeah, I used to have like a throwaway password that I used for all the low value sites that didn't have any financial info on me. You know, like websites where I blogs where I wanted to leave a comment. I had all the same password across probably 200 different sites. Even those now, I have crazy unpronounceable passwords everywhere. So it's about as secure, you know, it's as secure as it gets. I mean, there's this one vulnerability that if anybody actually knows my master password for LastPass, you know, they can have a ball with my computer. But that's the two-factor authentication thing, you know, gets around that because I can just take this and with, if this is not attached to my machine, nobody else can get in.
Right.
So you know, that's cool.
Right. I think that's a very valid, interesting point that we need to realize that we can't ask technology to solve a lot of our challenges. And I think we're getting into a lot of governance issues around security.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to understand that they need to put limits and controls and access controls into the system and not expect the machine to be the one that resolves all these problems.
Yeah, I think we can actually. We could do a better – there are things we could do to the design of the internet protocols so that there are some tweaks we could make to – Internet Protocol IP that would make it much harder for people to do denial of service attacks. And denial of service attacks, it's by itself is not a security problem, but they can make it easier for hackers to get into systems because you know you consume so much of the capacity just trying to fight off the or deal with the traffic that the DDoS attack brings. That it create some vulnerabilities. I mean, we can actually do a better job of making the thing that's missing from the internet architecture is there needs to be a protocol like IP that requires you to go through a connection phase before you can use it. So we have this IP is a connectionless protocol. So you can throw packets at any IP address you want to on the internet, right? They don't have to ask for them. You can just throw them as long as you have their address. To use TCP, you have to go through a connection setup phase where both parties to the connection agree that they want to communicate with the other party, and then that thing is all rate controlled. But what's really missing is something that is as flexible as IP is in terms of it's not rate controlled, but it requires an authentication phase.
Does that exist, but we're not using it?
Hadn't been. Well, it exists on other networks, but it was never actually done for the internet. So the internet.
What other networks have it that?
DECnet, Xerox network systems had it. There were like five other, the OSI networks had it. So there were five other packet networks that were created during the same era when TCP/IP was designed. And the designers of the other networks, they all did a more comprehensive job than the designers of the internet did. The chief flaw in the internet is that UDP, which is the companion protocol to TCP that relies on IP, doesn't have a connection phase. And so it simply mirrors what IP does. So it's really kind of redundant to IP. It's just IP plus multiplexing. But it actually does need to have it. We need something like UDP that is basically a free-for-all protocol, but that requires authentication.
Would it make the system more brittle at all, or is it would stay as nimble? It just would have kind of more strength of character, let's say.
Well, it would. You'd be able to say what the pipe that you have open to the rest of the world is fully open most of the time, right? So, which is why DDoS attacks work. So people can just throw traffic at your IP address. But there should be you need a two-tiered system where that you can only throw traffic at a really low rate at any open IP address until you've been authenticated or accepted. And then once you're accepted, then the door opens wider and you can do high capacity transfers. So that's what we need to have to prevent, you know, DDoS attacks from being a thing that just like people can still try them, but they're not going to get much result. We also need to authenticate the anonymity thing makes security really hard because we know how to build secure systems, and the first thing you have to give up is anonymity. So you have to have a legitimate a backwards and forwards path between the originator and the destination. And if you can, but the internet allows you to spoof source IP addresses and get good results. That's not helpful.
Right.
And everybody expects to be more or less anonymous on the internet most of the time. And, you know, that's just fundamentally, how do you place trust in an anonymous person?
Right. You need to somehow have an identity element there.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm willing to place very limited trust in anonymous persons. And for some, there are some apps where, you know, I don't really need to know who you are if you're just leaving whistleblower comments somewhere, for example. I mean, we don't need to know nobody needs to know who's necessarily leaving those comments. But I found that even operating a blog, I don't want to accept comments from anonymous people, because what happens is spammers will use the anonymous comment facility and, you know, put Viagra ads in my comment section and just mess up my blog, or just, you know, it's just, and people will just do malicious comments, people who don't like my point of view, of which there are a few.
I don't know why. Those people are very confused.
Yeah,
they should listen more.
Yeah, and yeah. One of the things about the internet that I really like the least is that whenever someone expresses an opinion, whenever someone disagrees with an opinion that another person expresses, there's a tendency to call them a shill. So right. there's one of the things that I follow pretty closely is there's sort of an ongoing battle between people who want to label genetically engineered foods and people who don't. And the people who are pro-labeling, invariably, whenever someone on the pro-engineering side says, well, you know, genetic engineered foods have tremendous benefits. I mean, they make farmers more productive and they
make land more productive, right?
Yeah, you can make, you know, you can put more nutrition. Golden rice has vitamin A in it, which prevents blindness, and that's good for people in the third world that have, you know, poor diets. You can make plants drought tolerant. But if you're an old school, I'm only going to buy it if Whole Foods sells it kind of person, and you know, like Neil Young, and you think Monsanto is the devil and Monsanto's behind all this, then anyone who expresses a pro-genetic engineering point of view is automatically a Monsanto shill. And if Monsanto was paying all the people who have been labeled Monsanto shills, they really wouldn't have any money left over to invest in research. So I don't even know how that's possible. But there's a lot of incivility. There's a lot of incivility on the internet. And it's, in the long run, that's pretty corrosive to the culture. We need to be able to disagree with each other without being disagreeable.
Well, it's always interesting to see what lists sort of have, protocol is probably the wrong word, but you know, they basically have a civility code of conduct. Mm-hmm. And when you surpass that, they tell you, I was on one the other day and they knock somebody off. And I thought, mm-hmm. I kind of like the fact that they stick with that. You know, the one person was just being pesky, and they said, please, you know, everybody's inbox was getting filled with their point of view. It was not helpful to the dialogue. So occasionally it does happen, not as often as we probably like.
Well, and that's the internet's a facility. It's about freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's generally good, but people do abuse their freedom sometimes. And if you get, some people get a little nutty. And with the internet, there's nobody holding you back and saying, you really don't want to, you don't want to mail that letter to the editor. You know, maybe the nature of his parentage is not really relevant in this, you know, in this case, right? Think about that. Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of things that the internet allow you to do, and express yourself endlessly is one of them.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, just because we can do it doesn't mean we should.
Yep. Okay, different issue, beacons. Personal curiosity on this one, because I know that I've seen that there's different versions of this going out. You mentioned earlier there's three different versions of beacons. What's the difference?
There are at least three different technical things that have to do with networking that I'm aware of that are called beacons.
Okay.
In a Wi-Fi network, the access point every 100 milliseconds sends an announcement message out that identifies the SSID. So when you're looking for Wi-Fi networks to connect to and you see these different names, mm-hmm. like one of my neighbors here is Drunken Frenchman, that information is extracted from the beacon that his access point is transmitting 10 times a second. So that's we've called those beacons since we did the initial design work on Wi-Fi in the early 90s. beacons are also in web pages. There's a tracking mechanism that involves putting an image on the web page, because when people download images, you get information about who they are, and you can install cookies on their machines. So if you put an unobtrusive image that's only one pixel, it's basically invisible. When people load the web page, then they will inadvertently, without knowing it, they'll download that tiny microscopic picture, and you'll be able to install a cookie and to retrieve the cookies and find out who they are, and that facilitates tracking them, especially. I mean, it could be a third party site that's doing that. So the picture is, you know, they're actually sharing information with a website that they don't even know they're connecting to. They think they're at Nordstrom's, and they're really sending their info to some advertising network somewhere. And then there's the newest and greatest version of beacons is something that tracks people around stores. And so Apple and Google, I believe, manufacture these devices that track people's movements around a retail store and or other public space. And I think the point of that is that if you happen to be in the shoe section of a store, then they can serve you up ads on your phone that are like, hey, here's the sales on.
Like a flash sale. I'm standing in the right section.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if you buy these in the next 10 minutes, we'll give you a great price. And that's the, so which one do you want to talk about?
I'm thinking the third one is right. The one I probably get the most activity or hear about. Mm-hmm. Even though the second one is kind of piqued my curiosity, but we can come back to that one. Let's go with door number three.
Okay. So,
because a lot of retailers are starting to use these now, and it's just a matter of gathering information. Do I need to be worried from a personal perspective that they're gathering information on me, or am I just sort of a moment?
Well,
they can
gather information on you, and I think they're probably perfectly entitled to gather information on your movements around the store, right? I mean that.
Did I authenticate? I mean, did I at one point give them permission to do that because I'm using their Wi-Fi?
If you didn't give them permission, all they know is that there's a warm body moving around the store.
Okay.
They don't know whether it's they don't know that it's you. They don't even know that it's a human being. It could be a bear, and they probably couldn't tell
the difference, right? A bear with a phone.
well, you don't even necessarily have to have a phone, but yeah. They can actually detect your presence as you move around the store. I mean, the doors that open automatically right when you're entering or exiting a Home Depot or a supermarket, they know there's a presence there even though they don't know who it is.
So can they pair, let's say it's Home Depot, with some, they've got an IoT tag with this warm bear body?
To actually know who you are,
well,
they would require some implicit consent on your part.
Okay.
And if they have a Wi-Fi network and you choose to use their Wi-Fi network, then they're going to know who you are. I mean, if you've ever like logged onto their Wi-Fi network once, then they're going to know who you are. And of course, whenever you check out at Home Depot, they offer to email the receipt to you because,
yes,
you know, they would love to save paper, right? It's not because they want to send ads to your email address. No, no, no.
I thought it was just to save me from having to file that.
Yeah, you want to type in your email address every time you check out?
I mean, no.
I'm not going to do that. That's stupid. But, if you're on it, and you have to have that network connection for them to send the ads to you, right? I mean, it doesn't do them much good to just know someone's moving around the store if they don't know some way to hawk products to you. So you do have to consent at some level, or they can't communicate with you. So they can passively collect the information, which may be helpful for them to know how many people, you know, looked at toilet bowl plungers, you know, and do they maybe need more stock or more variety, and how much time did they spend at the display, and did they end up, you know, carrying something off or not? I mean, they might find that they're, I mean, I think this is probably an ongoing problem, an old problem in retail is like, you know what your most popular items are, but how do you know what you could sell if you had it that you don't already have in your inventory? So it provides an answer to, you know, questions like that. And if you see that people are stopping and looking and then moving on.
The assumption is that you're missing a product that they would have there. Okay.
And that's why they always ask you, you know, when you're checking out, did you find everything you were looking for? And I just figure.
You just make something up that they
didn't
have.
None of their business. I mean, if I did, I bought it. And right. If I didn't, I'm angry at them for not having it. So I'm not going to tell them, you know.
Well,
I'm
but if you told them, maybe they would have it next time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not confident that the checker is going to do anything with the information.
Right, right, yeah,
right.
Right.
I don't think.
But
I don't,
the beacon
don't
might.
Think,
right.
I don't think they're going to write it down and send it to HQ. So I think it's just it's one of these ritualistic exercises that does.
My next retail experience is going to be totally you in my head thinking through all these things. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So yeah, you have to share. You know, if you want it, if you're coupon clipper and you want that 10-minute sale, then you're gonna have to give up some personal information.
So going back to your examples on the second beacon, is that a website version of a similar experience? They're looking to see what you're looking at on the website, getting a sense of who you are, what you're doing there.
I think those web beacons must be implicated in the fact that every time I buy something from Amazon, and I buy lots of stuff from Amazon, for the next 2 weeks, I get ads for something that's the
right,
more
you might have
equivalent
looked at, but you didn't
of what
actually
I just
bought.
Bought
it. Right, yeah.
And I thought this was some kind of like a old folks, you know, like an Alzheimer's support, you know, feature where like if you forgot what you bought, then you want, you know, we'll remind you what you just bought so you don't have to go buy another one. But I even get those ads on Amazon. So you buy something on Amazon and then like literally 10 minutes right. later, they're pitching you. A more or less equivalent product, maybe made by a different company, maybe cheaper, maybe more expensive.
I mean, as an avid shopper, I know exactly what you're talking about. I looked at a pair of shoes, and they've been following me for weeks. I might buy them just because I'm tired of looking at them.
Yeah. I mean, when I bought this office chair, I was harassed by you know, internet ads for 2 months, you know, for office chairs.
They were sure that one wasn't enough.
And there's no way for me to tell them, dude, thank you, but I already made the purchase, and I'm
right.
happy.
I'm,
right?
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, with all the examination Congress has done of internet advertising, can't they actually mandate that when you get an ad based on somebody's bizarre concept of preference that you can say no?
You could say move along.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm now
yeah.
looking for this.
Yeah, been there, done that, got right. the T-shirt, let's move on, you know? No. No way to do that. I mean, there are ways that I can say I don't ever want to see ads from that network again. Which is not, I mean, I don't have anything against the advertising network. They just made a wrong guess.
Right.
And, I'd like to tell them that, but they're not interested in hearing it.
Apparently that's not part of their feedback loop they're looking
for. Yeah, yeah. It's like, how could we possibly be wrong? The only thing I can figure is that, you know, when Amazon shows me these ads for, like, the cheaper, better, faster version of the thing I just bought, I think the company that's placing those ads is actually UPS.
Oh, delivery here.
Yeah, because if I send back the thing that I bought, and
they're going to make
these,
money both
they're
ways.
They'll triple their revenue on the transaction. You know, so I think UPS is probably behind it.
Yeah. Soon to be the U.S. Post Office, it's Amazon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they've got to deal with them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've finally realized that they should be using their infrastructure. Why be? You know, they're putting their sorting systems closer to the USPS locations, and then letting the government do the final leg. There's something to be said for that, actually.
Following the Netflix model.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, because Netflix, their fulfillment centers are close to major USPS sorting. They hired people that had a USPS background and helped them optimize their infrastructure so that they have, quick paths to the Postal Service.
There you have it. Any last thoughts?
Excellent.
Things to share with the people?
Well, so I've done my best to help get the court on the right track in terms of evaluating, you know, the FCC's judgment in this internet regulation fight. I can't really say that I'm super confident, you know, that truth, justice, and the American way is, you know, going to prevail in this fight, but I figure the issue of internet regulation is going to be ongoing, and there were no matter how even if it comes out the way I'd like for it to, it's obviously not the end of the story. And this is a global controversy. Right. Other countries are trying to figure out what they should do. Should they discard their pretty reasonable perspectives and regulatory systems that they have, like in Asia and Europe. Internet regulation is pretty sensible, and it's working pretty well. But they're being encouraged to discard their frameworks and just to avoid inconsistency with the American framework, which is, I think, would be a big mistake, and I hope that doesn't happen.
I hope that doesn't happen either. Do they follow? It's not like they're roaming way that everybody's got a different, you know, when you're in a country, the sort of the value of the internet cost hopefully makes sense. Unlike when you're walking around with a cell phone, who could be from any country there, and they've got spectrum issues. I mean, we've got some spectrum challenges. They have major spectrum issues.
Yeah, I mean, Europeans on spectrum have always been really screwy because they really want to tell the operators exactly what technology to use. There's some advantages to that, right? They invented GSM. It was sort of a European initiative. And it was very helpful for all the Europeans to be on a common technology standard. And that technology standard is used by AT&T and T-Mobile in the U.S. and in several other countries. But this is the nature of technology, right? Standards are only, they have a limited shelf life. So what happened, and the Europeans have never really been able to solve the problem of what happens when your mandated technology standard becomes obsolete.
Right. Well, they came out with the digital one economy idea this spring. It seems to be a press release at this point. I have yet to see any follow-up on it, mm-hmm. but there may be some thought behind it.
Yeah, and so they had to change their spectrum rules in order to get 4G. Because, you know, they very specifically said this spectrum has to run 2G GSM. This spectrum can only run 3G GSM. And obviously they didn't pre-allocate any spectrum to 4G before there was any 4G. So they had to go, you know, change the rules and, you know, had to basically pass a law to make 4G legal. So it's a real mother may I system in terms of spectrum. But oddly, they're freer than the U.S. is in terms of what you can do with an internet service.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
We'll have to follow along with that.
Wow.
Well, thank you very much
right.
for your time.
Yeah, as always, enjoyed talking to you and hope to do it again.
We will.
Well, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the podcast, go to iTunes and give us a thumbs up and come back in another couple of weeks when we'll have a new episode for you. If you'd like to comment on anything that you heard here today, you can do so on the hightechforum.org website. Just leave a comment on the blog post describing this podcast. See you in a couple of weeks.